That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 160 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you more great tips, insights, and unique business opportunities on every episode, delivered in our commute-friendly package. And that's all thanks to our sponsor, Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you're looking for your first home, or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure you visit daft.ie to find that next place you call home. I'm Conal Amora in Fáilte Isteach. More people contacting us on LinkedIn, telling us how they're enjoying our podcast while they fly long haul with Aer Lingus, where we are part of their in-flight entertainment. Lots of nice comments, so thank you. And don't forget to sign up so we can send you your personal copy of the podcast directly to your inbox every week. If you do, you will be in with a chance of winning two direct flights to Hartford, Connecticut, thanks to Aer Lingus. Yep, that's simple. All our tips and insights are brought to you, as I say, thanks to Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website, the best place to buy or sell your home in Ireland.
If it's for sale, it's on Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on Daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
When is competition actually competition? The more I delved into the Molson Coors drink business, the more I realized that they do business with many of their competitors. It's a funny old world as business. Molson Coors is a Canadian-American company that has a HQ in Chicago, another main office in the fabulously named Golden, Colorado, and yet another in Montreal and Quebec, and it's now believed to be the world's third largest brewer, with a presence in Ireland for just over 14 years, where they own the Franciscan Well and Madry brands, amongst others. Laura Lee is strategy and change director, not just for Ireland, but for Western Europe at Molson Coors. And given that almost 500 pubs have closed down here in Ireland in recent years, we wanted to ask her about how she would save the Irish pub. Laura Lee, no pressure, but welcome to That Great Business Show.
Great to be here.
You know a lot about the drinks industry because you've been in the drinks industry for a long time.
I certainly have. You don't need to say it quite like that, but yes, I certainly have been in it for a long time.
I mean, I'm not saying age-wise, just that you are mature in the industry. How about that?
Yes, I have. I've been fortunate enough to work across a number of different aspects of the drinks industry, and it's an industry that I absolutely love.
The worst one is to be called a veteran broadcaster. At that stage, you know what they're saying.
The cobwebs
are upon you. Save me the pub, please. Easy. Mm.
It's so tough, isn't it? I mean, the hospitality industry has had such a torrid time over the recent years, one thing after another, but it's so important too. I think for me, the pub is the heart of the community. It plays such a big role, not just about somewhere for people to go and enjoy a night out or a drink out. It's so much more than that. And I think we all have a responsibility to love and look after it.
And you know, because your mammy and daddy were in the pubs business in Britain.
They absolutely were. I think years ago, I think one of my first jobs was collecting glasses for my pocket money. So,
do you know you're not allowed to do that anymore?
Not allowed now, but going way back, it was fine.
Oh, sorry, I've said that again. Have I?
You have.
So we agree that the pub is central and important in a community. It's a community and it's where we commune. But they are shutting down because, is it the model is bust? Or is it the cost is gone? Or is it, what is it?
I think it's a combination of things, actually. I think people that are going out, and actually 73% of consumers tell us they are still going out and it's the treat that they prioritise over everything else. So people are still going out. But when they go out, they're expecting something different these days and they are much more discerning in what they're looking for. So being relevant and trying to cater to lots of different consumers, being really flexible about what you offer, when you offer it, how you offer it, I think is increasingly important. So being sort of stuck and doing what you've always done sometimes isn't enough. So we are getting lots of publicans coming to us asking for advice and ideas. How can we bring people through their doors? What's working in other outlets? So I think that's quite exciting for us to be able to be that advisor and be able to help. But there is a lot of pressure on publicans to do that. And when consumers are drinking differently, I mean, they really are. So since COVID, we've seen people, you know, go out earlier, they go home later. Thursday is the new Friday. People are drinking in their local pubs at the weekends and not coming out into cities. When they go out, they want food and they want experiences. They don't just want to drink. I mean, it's pretty demanding on a publican to try and meet all those needs. But actually being really on top of that is what's important to survive.
Fix the problem, though, please.
Fixing the problem.
As I told you.
No, absolutely. And I think where we can lend a hand is by sharing our experiences. So sharing what works. We are also really pretty advanced in terms of what we can do to drive traffic into customers' outlets as well. So that might be digital vouchering, helping them with events and entertainment, giving them ideas, bringing experiences. So recently we've done some great Madri Movida events in Cork that have really brought people out. Mixture of food and drink and
hold
music.
Madri Movida.
Madri Movida.
What
yes.
is Madri Movida?
So obviously Madri is a really quick growing Spanish lager that is one of my favourites in our portfolio.
And you just told me it is the name given to people from Madrid.
They are
Madris.
Absolutely, because Carlos, who was behind the beer, is from Madrid. He's Madrid born and born and bred. So he sort of inspired the product. But we brought these events into Cork and it was a real combination of food, music, dance, entertainment, really giving people a reason to come out. So that's what people are looking for. They're looking for experiences now, something they can put on Instagram, something they can tell their friends about, but they're looking for more than just a drink out. It's got to be something that kind of gets them off their sofas and out the door.
But does it last longer than a week or a fortnight? How can you get that or keep that going for 52 weeks a year?
Absolutely. It's being creative. I think, you know, we can certainly help with those events, but I think then that inspires people to kind of do their own thing. You know, I was in an event in Northern Ireland recently where I've never seen so many people turn out for a Tuesday night quiz. So if you're creative and you put things on, people will still come out the door.
A simple quiz.
A simple quiz. And it was amazing. We joined in. I mean, genuinely, the place was packed. I've never seen such a busy outlet on a Tuesday night. So, you know, I think if you can get that offering right, you can really bring people out.
Do you have to tweak it or is it just there is a quiz on Tuesday night? I mean, it sounds too simple to be true.
Yeah, I mean, it was interactive. There were people that clearly went every week and took it very, very seriously. But I genuinely think people will come out for something. They are looking for things to do. People have missed a load of occasions over the last few years. So giving them a reason to come out, not just for drinking, it's about what else can you offer whilst they're there. They will still come off the sofa.
Digital vouchers, how do they operate?
So we'll absolutely work with an outlet and put some drinks into the outlet and help them with their social media. So using their databases that they've collected, we will then send out vouchers to them, offering them a free pint or a reduced pint or bringing them into an event. And we'll help the outlet arrange all of that because not everybody's brilliant at social media. I know I'm not. So being able to be the expert and help an outlet with that to try and bring people in on a quiet night is something that we're all over. So, you know, that's where we can really help with those kind of creative initiatives that bring people in.
We're loving this, so keep talking and keep telling me about other case studies, anything else that works or maybe better still, what is a complete failure? In other words, tell them, don't do this. Don't try this at home.
I'm not sure about complete failures. I've seen pubs do all sorts of creative things. You know, people will play bizarre games of golf in outlets where there's no kind of clubs. And, you know, people will get really, really clever on things. And actually, the quirkier, the better, I think. In terms of failures, I think just doing nothing, just opening the doors and expecting people to walk in is just a non-starter these days. People are, you know, being attracted by all sorts of things. The offer's got to be better than what they've got at home if you're going to bring them out. So being really creative, sometimes it's the silly things that work. Sometimes it's the small things that capture people's imagination. But making them feel part of something, particularly in a community, is really important.
Now, as I mentioned, you have been in the pubs trade for a long time. There is a very big cultural difference, say, between pubs in the UK and pubs in Ireland. And we have adopted a bit of that, the noise and the tellies in the pub here that used to be there a long time ago when I was there. So I'm not counting you into that. Maybe we should go back to the old pub, the quiet pub, the nothing happening in the pub except having a quiet drink pub.
And, you know, I think there is still a place for that. But then that in itself is an offer, isn't it? Because it stands out amongst the competition. I love it sometimes when I go into a pub and they say, don't ask us about the Wi-Fi, try talking to each other instead. I love that because it just is refreshing, isn't it? So that in itself is a point of difference. So people shouldn't undercall that. But you have to shout about what it is that makes you special and what makes you different. And if that is the quiet pub without the TV where people can have a genuine conversation, brilliant. Tell the world.
And have you seen it in action? Have you seen those kinds of pubs here?
Yeah, you do. You do get them. Like I say, I love them. There's a pub that I go to on a relatively regular basis where they do have the sign up that says, don't ask us about the Wi-Fi code. So absolutely, I think there is a place for it. But you have to tell people. This is the thing. I think everybody needs help talking to people about what their offer is, you know, how to approach people, how to get that message out there, because it's quite difficult to cut through, isn't it? When there's so much noise and everybody advertising. You know, there are some publicans that just need a bit more help with that. And that's exactly what us and other brewers are here to do.
And, of course, you have to sell your own product. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you were telling me that you have to, I was going to use the word fiddle around with the product, but you wouldn't agree with that. You would say that you would refine the product regularly just to maneuver the brand and how it's positioned and all. For example, you've got your Madri that we mentioned, but you've also got the Franciscan Well.
Franciscan Well,
talk to me about Franciscan Well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's such a lovely product. So obviously Franciscan Well is brewed in Cork, has been for over 25 years. So it's its birthday this year, 25th birthday. And that's a product that's really had to kind of keep reinventing itself. So over the last...
Why?
I think just to stay relevant, because always want to bring in some newer drinkers. Oh, Guinness do it too, don't they, in terms of their advertising. They're constantly reinventing,
but the product remains the same.
And the product can stay the same, but the look and feel has to move with its audience. So Franciscan Well has had a complete rebrand over the last 12 months. People will have seen it. So we've kept the iconic colours, so Chieftain in green, Rebel Red in red, but we've actually given it a real makeover. So it just feels fresher and lighter and attracts a younger audience. And then we've brought in some new products on the back of it. So we've brought in a hazy beer that is kind of bang on trend at the moment for people that like craft beers. So that's given it a new lease of life. But again, you can't stand still. You have to keep reinventing and repositioning and associating yourself with different things to attract a different crowd. Otherwise, you keep the same drinkers, which is brilliant. You don't want to lose your loyal drinkers, but you have to bring new people in all the time.
I saw on your website this thing about the hazy beer.
Yes.
And that reminded me again, God, this is a conversation sounds like it's people of a certain vintage in a pub discussing the old days. If you had served a hazy beer, as you call it, back in the day, then you would have got it back in the face.
You absolutely
would have said, good, get rid of this.
Yeah, very different. But hazy beer has had a real kind of boom over the last kind of 12 months. So
why is it hazy?
It's just the way it's brewed. And it's kind of follows that American trend. So there's a lot of American pale ales that have that haze in them. So they are super popular. But people love them. Absolutely love them. So if you walk into any outlet in the city centre, you will find, I absolutely believe, you'll find at least one hazy on the bar. So it should always be ours, our Well hazy, but it may well be somebody else's.
And back to your Franciscan Well, could you develop that into a national brand, international brand, world brand?
Absolutely. So Franciscan Well is obviously big here. It's one of the leading Irish craft brands, but it's also got a real nice following in the UK business. It's got, we've got outlets in France, Irish bars right across France that stock it from an export perspective.
And do you ship it from here?
Yeah, we do.
But isn't that one of the problems that I've learnt about on the podcast about the kind of live beers is trying to ship them and trying to, well, obviously not blow up a ship
Or, no, easier in cans. Yeah. So far, far easier in a can. But we do send kegs as well. France has got a following. So we would love to see Franciscan Ale go further afield. To be fair, we'd love to be able to get it across to the US, but that is a step too far or a sea too far to be able to get it there. But at some point in time, it would be great to be able to get it brewed over there. But it has got a real following.
And that is the only way that you could do it, is by actually setting up your own brewery over there, is it?
Yeah, one of our breweries could potentially brew it. We could send a brewer over to help them brew, match it and make it right. But absolutely, it would be a great opportunity for the brand. And there are a number of Irish brands that are then doing exactly that and are selling well in the US too.
And what is the attraction, say, in the UK or in France for Franciscan Ale?
I think it's that Irish connection. There's just a lot of love for it. I mean, I always laugh whenever I go on holiday. You can find an Irish bar everywhere, can't you? But there's a real love for it.
But you can also find a British or an English bar as well.
Yeah, I think, one, the product has to be great. But the connection, the Irish connection, I think is really strong in a lot of those markets. And there's a real following for it. But the product has to be great, first and foremost.
And distillation, because you are not just a brewer.
No, we were Molson Coors Brewing Company. We are now Molson Coors Beverage Company. So that was a very conscious change. And across our markets now, we do work with a number of spirits brands. And that's really important to us. And we've done some work with soft drinks brands, and we've done some drinks with iced coffee as well.
What do you mean that you've done work with them? Do you own them or do you...
No, we partner with them. So
to do what?
So to distribute, to help them build some scale, actually. So we'll give them some of our experience when it comes to brand building and marketing, but we'll also help them kind of unlock some of those bigger customers. It might be on-trade groups, it might be the big off-trade retailers, and we'll help them with that. But they can use our wheels, they can use kind of our network of salespeople, and we just help build scale for those brands.
You're not doing it for free.
No, we're not. We're not. There's always something in there for us as well, because one, it's relevance with our own customers. It's really important to have a wide portfolio. But two, absolutely, you share the margin that comes through on that, but it still allows those brands the best chance of growing. And that's really exciting for us, actually, as a big brewer, and challenging, because you have to work very differently. You know, you're working with founders who are great entrepreneurs who can work at a speed that actually a big business like ours can't always work at. So it's challenging too, but it's been really rewarding. And it's been great, actually, for our customers to see us talking to them about tequila or gin or vodka. It's really different.
The small, tiny, think of a tiny little operation in Ireland, be it alcoholic or non-alcoholic, but a drinks company. Give them some of the wisdom of your advice, or some insights that you've picked up along the way as to what not to do and what to do. You know, we all dream big. We want to be vast.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's appreciating that it takes time, actually.
How much time?
The difficulty sometimes in terms of what I see is people that try and go too big too soon. So you try and spread yourself really thin. What's really important is to be big in a consumer's world. So if you can own your town or your city or your region first before you start trying to pick off big contracts, I always say that's the way to go, because you need to create that love and that consumer pull. Otherwise, your brand appears in a market where people don't know who you are. They don't have the same connection to you.
If you're big in Cork, and you are big in Cork,
yes,
you know what I'm going to say next.
Yes.
Dublin doesn't really love you, do they?
We have some great customers in Dublin.
I'm sure you have. But you know what I'm saying is that there has been that Dublin is Guinness, Murphy's is Cork type rivalry.
Yeah, I guess you always get that in terms of where your home is. You always have more love, but that's not to say that brands can't travel. So we work really hard on making our brands relevant right across the market. And that is because our sales team do a fabulous job. Our technicians do a fabulous job. They're out there talking
about
the brand. So they appear everywhere.
You're a Franciscan Ale. How do you introduce it, and how do you promote it, and how do you push it against direct competition? I mean, the rest of them are doing exactly what you're doing. How do you win?
We talk about the credentials of the brand. So first and foremost, it's been around 25 years. It's well established. People know it. It's one of the most recognised Irish craft brands out there in terms of ales. So it has a real warm, fuzzy feeling.
And what are you using to get that brand recognition? Are you using old-fashioned ads in newspapers, or are you pure all the time on digital or social?
It's a mixture. So you've got the loyal consumers who might see the general posters or just literally come into the outlet and love to see the brand serve brilliantly. But then we'll also do a lot of work on digital. We do a lot of experience work. So the big grill in Dublin back in the summer, okay, the weather wasn't kind to us, but it was a huge celebration for Franciscan Ale, and actually gives you a whole new audience.
I was at the big grill.
Yeah, you were.
And the weather was lovely the day I was at it.
Yes, the day before, perhaps less so.
So I'm still trying to figure out as to any real big insights that you have as to what really, really works. I know you don't want to give away your trade secrets, but that's what we're here for. We're trying to extract those trade secrets.
Yeah, and it's an association. So why do people pick you over somebody else? Is it because of the product itself? They can't get it somewhere else. Is it because of an association? So they love football, you're the brand of football, or they love golf, you're the brand of golf. Whatever that may be, there's an association. There's a reason to drink you. That's really important.
And what is Franciscan Well? Is it football? Golf?
No, it's much more
cricket?
Around that Cork piece, really. And it is much more around experiences now.
Cork v Dublin. It is not going to work. I'm telling you.
We've got plenty. If you were at the Big Grill, you would have seen how many people came and enjoyed Franciscan Well at that stand. So there's lots of Franwell lovers in Dublin.
I'd say there's people from out of town who just wanted to stick it. But sorry, I thought I just had you there for a second. The way that you are describing it there makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. You've latched on to something.
Yeah, you do.
And then you have to work it really hard. I mean, I presume your team works really hard.
Yeah, they work really hard, but they also work really hard to be a brilliant service provider to their customers. You think about publicans, it needs to be easy. They're busy people, they've got lots to do. So how do you be the advisor that brings in new ideas, new campaigns, but also how do you be the person that comes in and always delivers when you say you're going to deliver, that always has brilliant quality beer, that whose technicians are second to none? It's making sure all of those things are true too, because the service aspect of what we do is almost as important as the brand.
But what do you do when you go into my local... Do you stand there and chat to the owner and say, we've got some great ideas? Or have you prepped your sales team to go and sell the gospel, and that the gospel should include this option, that option, and those options over there?
All starts with what the publican wants and what their consumers want. So it's about listening rather than preaching. So we absolutely listen first and foremost. The most important thing is to understand the kind of person that walks in and drinks at that bar. What are they looking for? What else is the licensee looking to get from them? Is it about keeping them for longer, bringing in new consumers, getting them on a weekend as well as a weekday? What do they need? And then we can try and help them with what the brands might be, ours and others, because it's not always about our brands. What kind of campaigns will work for them to get people in? What does the garden need to look like? What can we offer in terms of support for that? So I think it starts with listening, because every pub is different.
Will the pub survive?
I hope so. I mean,
hope is different to yes, it will.
Oh, I've worked in this business for so many years.
You're back again. I didn't even say it this time.
You didn't have to, but I couldn't bear to think that it wouldn't. And I think there are enough people like me that think it is a super important part and a very unique and special part about our market that, you know, we should absolutely cherish. So, yeah, I think even if you're not a drinker, you can still benefit and use your pub.
We spent a lot of time back maybe 10, 15 years ago praying for a cafe culture in Ireland. And there are a large number of top class restaurants and cafes now that serve drink. Is that the problem? Is that, have they eaten into the traditional pub?
I don't think so. I'm a big believer that competition is a good thing, because it makes people raise their game. It gives you the opportunity to kind of share ideas. You create circuits for people to go around, because not everybody wants to go and drink in the same pub. But if you've got a cluster of outlets, pubs, bars, restaurants that people can go out and build an evening around, amazing.
But back in the day, here I go again, it was that you went to your favourite local, they knew you, and he, normally a barman, would say, usual, and you felt at home. How's that gone?
I think that's important, but I don't think it's everything. To the early conversation we had, I think people are looking for another reason to go out. So that might be great for them on a Friday night when they want to drink in their local, they want to feel part of something. But on a Tuesday night, they might want that quiz night. On a Sunday, they might want an amazing pub lunch. So you can have a variety of things happening in a town. It's not always about your local. If you want people to keep coming back into your local, then you have to keep giving them reasons to. But if not, a bit of competition is not a bad thing, and certainly can be great for an area where you get a circuit.
Isn't it that ironic that you mentioned competition? Because at the very beginning, what did I say?
You did.
Competition isn't really competition, because you guys all work together, really.
Yeah, we do partner in different markets with different brewers. And that's pretty standard in our industry, because sometimes it makes sense. If somebody's got a brewery in a market and you haven't, they can probably help you, or they can be the wheels for your product. So that's kind of sensible business. Like I said, a bit of competition is not a bad thing. It helps us all raise our game. And I think publicans would tell you that it's not a bad bad thing either to see somebody new come onto the scene and shake things up a little bit, which is kind of what we're trying to do.
Laura Lee, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Such an easy one for me. So
you're the first person who said it was easy. Everybody else seems to go groan, moan.
Easy question. And I love it as a question. So my answer to that would be Lisa Fallon. So your listeners will know Lisa from her career in football and as a sports commentator. Lisa spent some time with my team earlier on in the summer and she was brilliant. So talking about the power of the team and how to kind of work really well together, but also about diversity of thinking. And, you know, we need to bring more women into the drinks industry. I'm a big believer in that. And the likes of Lisa as a role model in my team, I think would definitely do that. She would certainly get me to put my football boots on. So I'd have Lisa in my team every day, please.
You probably have a favourite team at home, have you? Who are they?
I'm a Bournemouth supporter, but I try and keep that quiet.
Okay. One last question. There's always a last question. And then another last question. I saw the most curious little thing on your website. You'll also hear more on our plans to move away from the use of CVs within our recruitment process referenced in today's Irish Sun. What's that about?
Absolutely. So for certain roles and for some of our entry-level roles, we are trying to ditch the CV.
Why?
So because we actually think that you make a different decision when you don't have a CV. You know,
you can make a very wrong decision.
You can, but actually you give different people an opportunity. And I can think of people that have come into our business that under that standard criteria probably wouldn't have got past the first couple of phases, yet have gone on to absolutely rip up trees and be amazing. So sometimes giving people a different chance, and everybody deserves that, regardless of looking at their university career or what qualifications they've got or what experience. Do you know what? If you're looking for someone to come into a sales role, what you really want is people that customers love. And absolutely, they don't have to have had the same level of qualifications to do that. They don't need it. They just need a winning personality and an ability to be able to talk to people.
And if you are applying, do you just send a mail and say, my name is Mary Smith, I'd love to work with you?
It's not quite like that, but there is a way of doing it. So you can send in like a video application and that's probably the way to do it. So you get to kind of introduce yourself in a different way.
And is that specifically for sales?
Entry-level roles. Yeah. So some of our sales roles, some of our technical engineering roles work that way as well. But those are the ones that we're looking at the moment. And it's brilliant because, like I say, you get all sorts of different people that apply that might previously have written themselves out of a drinks industry or career in sales. And we get some fabulous people.
I love the idea. I think it's a great idea. Well done.
Thank you.
Not at all. That is Laura Lee, who has a huge title. She is a strategy and change director of Western Europe at Molson Coors. And she's also now part of Team GBS. Laura Lee, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Are you buying or selling a home? If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
We're sticking with the drinks theme on this episode of That Great Business Show. We were just talking about the future of the pub, where many a love story has begun, like that of Robert Barrett and his now wife, Baggy. They met online and then in a Limerick pub for their first date. And now, 8 years later, they've given birth to the Rebel City Distillery in Cork, based in the old Ford car factory there. And if you look at it online, it is a lovely piece of repurposing of a property. The Rebel City Distillery produces Maharani gin, and more recently they've started to distill an absinthe, And for those of you who know your impressionist painters, it was said that their new way of looking at the world had a lot to do with whatever psychedelics were in absinthe. But like some of the best stories, the facts are a little different. The bad press that absinthe got seems to be more about rival winemakers having a couple of bad harvests and running a smear campaign against absinthe that was winning market share, rather than any mind-bending ingredients in the drink. So, what's the truth? Well, who better to ask than Cork's loved-up distillers? Baggia and Robert Barrett, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
I don't know where to start. Baggia, how did you end up marrying this fella here? Because I was told that maybe wasn't going to happen.
I moved to Ireland 10 years ago to do an MBA.
You came here for the good weather, I know.
I love Ireland because it's kind of very similar, like Kerala, very green, rain, so it's similar. I came here for an MBA. I was living in Dublin. I moved to Limerick after getting a job and I met him on a blind date.
You did it online. You did a Tinder or something, didn't you?
Yes.
And you then started talking about distilleries and you were chatting away. The future was all distillery. Had you anything at all in your background about distilling, distillery, drink, anything at all?
I was into software. So I was making software my whole life. I'd say 15 years in software. And I took a huge 360 degrees from software into drinks world. But I have to say that back during my childhood, my father used to run an arak shop. Arak is the kind of distilled toddy. And my mother was not quite impressed by his career choice and he had to give up. And 30 years later, here I am running a distillery with my husband. And my father is really proud of this whole adventure and my mother as well now. So
no, she's not so impressed. And then why gin, Robert?
So like you say, we started talking about opening up a distillery.
What was the chat like? Like you, people talk about lots of things, but you don't just say, what about opening a distillery? What had you been doing?
Yeah, so I've been about 12 years in distilleries and production environments.
Yeah, so you had in the background, yeah.
Yeah, so I always had the background. And the previous job just prior to setting up the distillery was helping other people set up distilleries. So I kind of started thinking that maybe we should do it ourselves. And myself and Baggy were talking about it. We kind of wanted to have a product that would draw both of us into it, you know. Obviously, I already had that background, but it'd be good then to find an angle that Baggy could come in and take ownership of a spirit too. And gin was a very good category for that because it's a very open category. Aside from juniper, you can pretty much do what you want. And Baggy's from Kerala, and Kerala, even in India, is known as the land of spices. So we started looking at finding unusual botanicals that Baggy sourced from a women's collective. And then it kind of went from there that should be the first product.
And gin has the benefit that you can distill it and sell it not quite the same day, but not far off it.
Mm. Yeah, like it's flexible. It's a white spirit, so there's no aging required. It's a redistillation with your own ingredients and in your own proportions. And then a little bit of time for flavor marriage in the blend tank. But essentially, it can go from being distilled to bottled within a week. Yeah.
Exactly. So therefore, a quick turnover, fast turnover, yeah. Cash in the bank quickly because you've got to start moving stuff. The only problem is that there's an awful lot of other gins out there. How do you compete?
So for us, our key USP is having India and Ireland in a bottle. That's what Maharani is about. because we both are from two different cultures and from two different continents. We always love celebrating both the festivals, and that's what this gin is all about.
I saw this and I was going to tell you that I thought the real reason behind the marriage is because you can celebrate Easter, St. Patrick's Day, Christmas, Diwali, and the Kerala festivals of Vishu and Onam. Do you do any work?
We actually have festivals most of the months, I have to say. That's the joy of bringing two cultures together, and that's what Maharani is about. And we also wanted to support some of the social issues and which we believe in. And we also decided to source our signature spices from women-run farms in Kerala, South India. Especially in developing countries, women's rights are not much talked about. And we wanted to do our bit. So signature spices come from there. And that's why the gin is called Maharani, which means queen. and we can call Maharani as Queen of Gins.
That's a nice name, and it's a nice idea. Except, again, back to the problem. The problem is that there are other kings, queens, princes, and pretenders out there. Mm. And, you know, differentiation is easy because you're talking it now. But when I walk in and into a bar and I see 1,000 gins behind the bar, what's the key?
It's getting the word out, educating people, getting in front of people's faces, telling them the story. Like, I mean, we, like I said, we kind of distill it down to made in Cork, spiced in India. So that's kind of, it is unusual from that point. It stands out from a flavor profile. It's more citrus and spice. It's less heavy on the very juniper level. So it works well as a mixed drink. It's good in cocktails. It's even good as a sipping gin. So there's kind of just getting the word out there, talking to retailers and
I had a guy that you know, I think, Brian Nation, in here, probably sitting on the same seat there, and he's ex-Irish distillers, he's now over in the States, and he was talking to me about, is it Keeper's Heart? Mm. And Keeper's Heart is a blend of whiskies. And the problem, well, I said to him, was, look, you're trying to serve all markets. And he kept going and he kept talking to me about that's great in cocktails and great on its own, great on ice, great on its own. It can't be. It cannot be all things to all drinkers, can you?
I would think you can if you fit in the particular, not everyone's going to like it. I mean, with all products, they're either, you know, they're good and they're great, but even the greatest products, there's always going to be someone that doesn't like it. With our profile, citrus and spice, it does kind of appeal to a lot of palates. Absinthe would be different. It's very much, if you like aniseed, you like it. And if you don't, you don't. But the gin is a lot more balanced and it's a lot more spread out and it's, you know, you can mix it. You can have it with cuisine. So while not everyone's going to like it, a fairly high percentage of people will.
And the absinthe is, because since you mentioned it, at least that makes sense to me, because not everybody is making absinthe. You are the only Irish-made absinthe.
Yeah, correct. Mm. Yeah.
But a couple of years ago, there was no absinthe because of that little story I told. Mm. But you have educated me otherwise, is that was a bit of bad on the part of the grape producers. Is that true? That is the actual, the real truth.
Yeah, I mean, there was the temperance movement going against it. There was the wine industry going against it for different reasons. Obviously, wine industry was stealing market share. Temperance movement, it was an easy first target for them to go after.
Is there any truth in the fact that it's got this mind-bending stuff in it? Or?
It's pretty questionable. I mean, there's certainly a lot of people getting drunk, but not really getting hallucinogenic effects.
It's regulated as well.
Yeah, there's an element in it called Toujon, which is from wormwood, which you have to keep below a certain level.
You have wormwood in your one.
Yeah. So modern recipes will have a lot less wormwood than the older pre-ban recipes. So the older ones would be a lot more bitter. That's why the sugar cube was often used when you're serving. Ours and other more modern absinthe aren't so unbalanced and bitter that way, so they don't really require it. But that was the reason for that kind of sugar being served as well.
Right, let us talk absinthe. So, because it is, you have a unique product, but you also have a very small company. Mm. How many of you are there now? Mm. Am I talking to the company?
almost. full-time is ourselves and we have a tour guide and an intern. Well.
So I have to say 4, including us.
Okay, yeah. 4 people, one island, trying to ship product and trying to, you said yourself, Robert, educate people.
Yeah.
It's a slow process. Yeah. How do you do it?
So especially for absinthe, what we understood is there is a lot of notion around it. And we started using our distillery space itself to educate the people. So we have an experience called Chase the Fairy, which is just to deconstruct the absinthe notion. So it happens once a month on a Saturday. So it's all about absinthe, absinthe history, and just tell people, hey, look, it's not as bad as we thought it was.
And Chasing the Fairy is?
Absinthe was always known as Green Fairy because traditional absinthes are green in color. Ours is more an opaque one. So the whole spin around the fairy theme, Chase the Fairy. So.
And I also saw, because it's on your website, actually, may I say to whoever made that a website, it's lovely. It is a really, it's a strong website.
Thank you.
And which is like, there are a lot of bad ones out there, I've noticed. So you've obviously spent some quids and some time on it.
Yeah, I think we spend a lot of time, especially in the design aspect of it. Even with the brand design, we spend a considerable amount of time with it, even with the website look and feel. And we also got a lot of support from Bod Volcha, I have to say, especially when we developed our tourism product, our visitor experience. So we took in a lot of feedback, which was given by them to make it look like the way it looks now.
Because what I was going to say about the website is that I saw your absinthe there and that it's kind of nice, the fact that you can number each bottle individually. But that says something else to me as well. It means you've got both the time and the throughput that you can actually spend the time writing your names on it.
So for the Absinthe, we put it on the Rebel City Distillery Series. So we initially put it out there in a very simple brand, Rebel City Distillery Series, and it's a different series. So that's the first one is Absinthe. So that one was handwritten Absinthe, but now we have labels front and back that are already pre-printed with Absinthe. And so we move on to another one in that individualized series, which will be Pomelo Vodka, which is one of the main ingredients in our gin is Pomelo. And
what is Pomelo?
It's like a big grapefruit, really. It's a
very citrus. It's a kind of grapefruit in Asia. So it's going to be a citrus-style vodka, which is going to come up. So the whole distillery series is a kind of innovation engine for us. As you said, initially it was all handwritten, but right now it's all Absinthe is written. And we also added a back label to the Absinthe because people don't know how to drink Absinthe. So we introduced a signature service, which is called Ulysses Mule, which is a spin-off on the classic Russian mule.
If you are having to produce different signature series, as you call them, are they all short runs and therefore do you then ditch your Absinthe? Or is this...
No, because we start with like, it's kind of a way for us to dip the toe in the water. So like we were saying, that's why they're individually handwritten. But now the Absinthe will be kept permanently. So it has a label, Rebel City Absinthe pre-printed. So it's more retail ready now than the previous version.
And
was.
Is it being kept longer term because it's worked? It has actually stood out and stood out,
It's more than a year since we launched it, so there is definitely an interest in people for that. I'd say it's about educating and getting it out, but definitely there is a room for Absinthe in Ireland.
It hits another target. I mean, for the Absinthe, a lot of cocktail bars really like to have it, so it kind of gets us in other avenues. We launched it around the same time as the Visitor Centre, which harkens back to your previous point about educating people. Now that we actually are open, it's good from a cash flow point of view, and it also has the subsidiary benefit of educating people about both about the gin and the Absinthe and any subsequent new product as well.
And then do you sit down and try to figure out what could be next? Because of,
So the next is definitely going to be the Pomelo or the citrus style vodka, which is going to come, and we know it's going to take Maharani name eventually. So that's going to be the next, and then we also have a recipe for rum, which we want to do, but we're just waiting to find the right time for it.
I love this one about the recipe because you were claiming that it was discovered in the, for the Absinthe, discovered in a French book dated 1871.
Rob found it.
I have in a previous life written some of this stuff.
It's a reprint now. It's not original, dusty copy of it. But it was a reprint of a book of different spirit recipies that was first published around 1871.
Who drinks Absinthe?
Picasso.
No, Venice, you're alive. what's the profile of the people who are drinking it?
Creative.
Like from an actual flavor profile, it's aniseed.
Yeah.
Like licorice, aniseed type flavors, which is a very popular spirit category. Not so much in Ireland, but in other countries like France, Czech Republic, Turkey, Greece, that kind of aniseed spirit. Kind of arc.
Where
is
Ouzo
quite
was.
Yeah, Ouzo is another example. Yeah. They're all in kind of the aniseed family. While fennel is also in the recipe, so ours is a bit more kind of rounded out rather than just purely aniseed. Like we have experimented, like Peggy was saying, with the long serve, which is with ginger ale. So it does work very well in cocktails because it stands up to other flavors.
This is the same conversation I had with Brian Nation about if you put a soda of anything into these lovely drinks, you're not just destroying them. He said to me it was making the drink even nicer. I'm thinking, if you distill, the point is to get that taste, is it not?
See, it's Absinthe is really sippable, neat. But not everybody would like to sip it neat. So it's important your drink actually works well on a long finish as well, because long finish is something which most of the people would love to rather than just sipping it.
Remind me now, you were 15 years in software and now you're talking about a long finish. I love it. So when did you decide that it was a long finish is a good thing?
It's in the past few years, definitely. This world is new for me and I really love this world as well. It's kind of interesting. And there is a creative element in this, which I really enjoy. So,
and then there is the future, of course, because you've just told me now that you are heading to the States.
Yeah.
A vast market, but a difficult market, because I was telling you in return about a number of people that we've had on the podcast, and anybody who's interested in trying to crack the drinks market in the States, do listen back to it. It ain't easy. What are you going to do that is different?
So we are going to focus on New York and New Jersey, where we have a higher Indian and Irish diaspora. So we're going to tap into those two, especially specifically Indian diaspora, where the gin will appeal really well.
And how do you do that? I presume that there are many, many gins in India and of Indian origin, no?
Unfortunately, I don't think yet, because Indian gin market is just booming. It's just getting into a stage. It's just growing only. So I don't think there is many Indian gins in the US yet.
Did the gin and tonic not originally or come out of India when during the Raj period? And,
yes, that is right. So everybody was getting malaria. They were drinking tonic and they started putting gin into it. Infamous culture.
No, I think it was the other way around. They were drinking gin.
So the infamous culture actually originated from there.
So you must have loads and loads of gins already.
There's a few craft brands in Indiana. It is burgeoning scene there, but there's not as many as you think. There's certainly not the level of brands that there is here. And like Peg is saying, like our gin already kind of does a very good appeal amongst the Indian diaspora. We've had YouTubers from Kerala come and with 2.5 million followers and that kind of stuff. So
I love the numbers. Numbers are mad.
Because people can connect to the brand. It's a kind of like the first international brand, especially from Kerala. And we are the biggest diaspora across from. So yeah, there's a natural kind of brand awareness, which we already have, especially in our community. So we want to tap into that. So our focus is going to be New York, New Jersey, and of course, Ohio, because we recently got a deal with them.
Now, don't skip over that. How did you get, lots of people who may drink or who are thinking of making drinks would love to know, how do you get a deal in Ohio?
Well, Ohio is one of what they call the control states. So it's the government that controls distribution there.
And does that make it easier?
In many ways, it would make it easier because you're dealing with one entity rather than multiple entities like you would be in New York, New Jersey, for example. So if you get the green light from them, you can tap into their entire network, which is the whole state. And Ohio is like 10 million people. So that's why New York, New Jersey, Ohio are the kind of original initial focus. And then talking about difficult markets on a medium term, we'd like to look at India too. But that's again, like America, a state level distribution where each state is completely different from the other.
And Baggy, when you're trying to tap into the Indian market in the States, what are you using? Are you using advertising, straightforward, old-fashioned advertising, digital advertising, or how are you talking to
So digital, tasting, so we are there.
Tasting?
Yes, tasting.
How many? You told me there are four of you. How are you going to do it?
We have found the right distributor, importer.
How did you find that?
So it was through one of our contacts, I would have to say, and she believes in this brand. So her connection is also like Irish Indian kind of background. So she relates to the product as much as we believe in this product. So she's on board with us. And we are with her since last October. So that's why the whole purpose of going next week is just to do a lot of meeting people, tasting.
And we will be connecting you with a lot of people over there who have both bars. And there's also a lovely Tony Sheridan. You didn't mention Connecticut, but you got to go to Connecticut because Tony Sheridan is a huge fan of the show here and he can get you into the casinos there. And you're going to say to me, the casinos, the numbers are nuts of the amount of drink that people, well, they probably, to soothe their losses, they probably do so. But I think they once told me that there is as much booze drunk in the casinos has come out of all the off-license or something. It's such a vast one. I presume if you can crack one of those, happy days.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's all about finding a couple of like big accounts that kind of you can get that throughput going. I mean, travel retail is another big one, which we're only just starting with as well, with Cork Airport at least. So it's
Tony's the chair of the 6 airports in Connecticut.
Wow.
And he's from Meath. He's the man. Tony's the man. Tony Sheridan. We will connect you. Back to expansion. Like, you, like again, remind me, four people, you need cash. You need to grow. What are you doing? What's the plan?
So
we're trying to raise investment for that purpose because we've kind of built the foundation. We have the distillery with the visitor center. We've the two brands and we have the route to market in the States, here, a little bit in Germany, Sweden, Singapore. But as you correctly pointed out, we're a small team. So therefore, you need to grow the team and particularly sales and marketing. Sales is a resource in terms of people, and then marketing, both people and actual campaigns, digital ad. So we're just trying to raise investment at the moment through either equity or EIAS. You know, we've been talking to people over the last year or so, but they didn't quite get over the line. So we're just really looking to find a good partner to push it up.
And you don't have to go into any great detail on this, but in terms of trying to get it over the line, I presume that they were saying that the gin market is... It's oversubscribed.
I think it was the right thing, to be honest, because I don't think it was also a strategical partner for us. The partner did not have any understanding how the drinks world works. So for us, we would ideally look for somebody who has some kind of experience or some kind of enthusiasm into the spirits world.
Smart money is what you want.
Exactly.
Yes. Rather than just money. So.
Yeah. Like previous people were talking, weren't from the sector, so that made they weren't comfortable with it because they didn't understand it. So we're now really looking to try and find...
How much?
In an ideal world, 500,000 would help us fill out the team and
go bigger.
But it's funny because every time we say 500,000 because we've got to a level, people say it's not enough, that we should be wanting more.
And it might be because in the States, and you will learn this from the States, is that they say you have to take more because they want you to go bigger and go faster. And there is no limit. If you're making just gin, how quickly can you turn around an absinthe?
Similar time frame.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
I presume that you're now going to set off a big absinthe production rush in Ireland. There'll be loads of people chasing fairies everywhere.
Hopefully. It takes a bit of time with just the education of it.
I'm going to get that little book. I'll have the ingredients and the way of making it up.
I suppose the other thing with absinthe is gin is a very large market with a lot of players, and then absinthe is a very small market with very few players. So they're kind of ends of the spectrum. So it's kind of
vodka, we'll find the right one. We'll sit in the middle.
And then you've chosen to go to vodka, but I presume their vodka is probably even bigger, is it? I don't know. Is the gin bigger than vodka? Vodka bigger than gin?
So craft vodka is, there is not much craft vodka scene yet. So I'd say there is a nice room there.
Yeah, on the kind of craft scene, there's probably a lot less vodka brands than there is in terms of gin brands. So there, and if you do something different with it, like vodka, again, is a very flexible category. You can have your classical straight vodkas with no flavor, or you can have, you know, a citrus vodka in our case, which means there's a lot more you can do with it. So I think there'll be a bit more movement in the vodka category.
Talk to me about how you found your lovely factory space. I'm sure you don't call it a factory. I'm sure it's production.
We love that space.
It is lovely.
Yes.
And how did you come across it? I mean, everybody knows where it is or what it was, but you got it.
We were probably looking, starting to casually look around 2018, 2019. And one of the more interesting industrial estates in Cork is the Marina Commercial Park, which is a site that spans what was the Dunlop and the Ford factories. So I was talking to Dermot there, who's the kind of commercial director, and he showed me what would become the site, which at that stage was an empty building with the doors hanging off of it. And he said, I think this would be a really good space for what you're thinking of. And it really is, because for the same rent, you have a building with a history behind it and a visual kind of...
Much of character to the space. Yeah. It's a beautiful building.
And light.
Yes, openness. There's a sense of openness and it's beautiful. And we just kept all the walls as such because we did not want to dilute the history of the space as well. So that adds a lot of drama to the space. And people who come in there, they love it.
And well, just again, from your website, it looks fantastic.
Yes.
So when you raise your cash, what's the big dream when you're holding hands together? When you're holding hands together, what do you dream about? And for the company in its entirety, do you think in 10 years' time that you'll be taking on Irish distillers? Or
We want Maharani gin and vodka to be a global one, a global brand. That is what... And be happy and peaceful.
Yeah, I mean, we want to kind of grow that brand and subsequent brands to kind of a sustainable scale, yes, where there's kind of where we can go and see it being consumed and enjoyed.
Yes.
And then from the distillery point of view, we want to grow the visitor centre and make it a bit more of a kind of a community hub and a bit more, add a bit of more culture to it. Like we've done bits and pieces so far with kind of teaming up with artists and stuff, but we want to kind of do more of that kind of stuff as well.
Because we see that space as a space where art can come together and kind of a lot of artists around as well. So
you're being very gentle in saying that, you know, that you want to grow it sustainably and when, not if, when you get the big order. Mm-hmm. And you can produce 1 million bottles or 5 million bottles. Mm. You'll do it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. So there goes the sustainability stuff. So do you ever dream of it? I love, you know, you're sitting thinking, oh God, you know, this could be vast. This could be huge. I love those kind of thoughts. But yeah.
To be honest, are we that? At the end, we want to be see the brand as something which is enjoyed by everybody. I don't want to really put numbers onto it. And I don't think we really think that way. I don't know.
I mean, to your point, I mean, like earlier, we do want to see it as an international brand. We do want to go into places and see it and have it grow. And so there's no point saying otherwise. Because it's as hard to manage a small business as it is to grow a large one. So you may as well have a large business,
And
do you hear that, Peggy? You're going big and you're going international.
Go big, win big.
That's exactly it.
Yes.
Final question we have for everybody. We ask you, who would you hire in a heartbeat? I hope you got my email. Did you get the email?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. And have you got one each? Ten each?
Yes, five? One each, yes.
Okay, well, beg you. Ladies first, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Indra Nui, the ex-CEO of PepsiCo. So I always looked up to her and her leadership always inspired me. The way her trajectory was built, I think it's fascinating. And I want to be somebody like her.
And have you made contact with her?
I've tried on LinkedIn a couple of times. So
we will tag her on LinkedIn. And if she doesn't respond, we'll go mental on your behalf. Because, of course, she is the kind of person who would actually deliver and be able to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely.
Robert.
The founder of a brand I really admire, which his name is Mikkelberg Bjørksel. And the brand is Mikkeler. Which is a craft beer brand. I've always loved the way they kind of melded it being a really good product and really great branding. Like he hired an artist, I think Keith Shore did all his branding. Every product has another kind of, it's all these two kind of characters. I think they're Sally and Jane, and it's just really bright and vibrant. And at the same time, he also built out a great bar and restaurant aspect to his business. So he's got great restaurants in Copenhagen.
Yeah,
all over
50
Europe
countries
as well,
now currently.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we love his branding and his whole product is kind of authentic, but very cool.
And when is your restaurant opening?
The visitor center has been kind of our first tour into the hospitality world. And and it's mostly been run by Baggy, but it's like over 105 stars on Google.
Yeah, and TripAdvisor Travelers Choice Awards as well. So,
how many hours a week do you work? Honest answer.
I'd say more than 50, 60 at this stage.
Robert?
Yeah, we're kind of 6 days a week, most weeks at this stage.
I know,
We can't switch off at all. So you're constantly thinking of doing new stuff or an idea pops in. So,
I mean, yeah.
And we both work in distillery and come home. So
for the next couple of months, we have like of America. Then we come back, we do Savor Kilkenny show. Then we do
Cork Kerry
Food Festival in City Hall. And then we do Ballymaloe for 2 weekends. So that kind of brings us all the way up to Christmas, really. And then
and we have tours to do. So it's always like, it's pretty busy.
You better give a shout out for Bord Bia because they have been good to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do they do for you?
Bord Bia were partners from the start. So they co-funded our branding and they co-funded our initial PR drive. And I should also mention another entity, which is Cork City Local Enterprise Office.
Yeah.
They love our Leos.
Yeah. And they, like Bord Bia, have been there since the start. A grant at the very start, and then a grant recently as well that helped with marketing and staff.
And with Bord Bia, did you use their marketing insights to think and find out about what did it teach you? I love people to understand what's available. Well, how did you use it?
Like for the gin brand and the distillery brand, they were kind of The
whole brand direction.
Without them, we wouldn't have been able to do it. They sat us down. We thought everything through, who the customer will be, what kind of style we want, what our values were. And yeah, they were invaluable, really. Like Nick Curtis Davis and Zulma Wallace and Nicola Martin were all.
And the whole Foodworks program was also.
And we were also in the Foodworks program, which was a separate thing, which was in Enterprise Ireland, Bord Bia and Chagas. And that was a good program. And again, there's another opportunity from Bord Bia tomorrow, which is they're having a retail showcase and we'll be at that talk to some retailers. Yeah.
And, so and they have also brought you to the States or helped you into
the
States.
Yeah, in Ohio. Yeah.
The Ohio was facilitated by Bord Bia, and they have a very good woman who runs the Bord Bia New York office, which is Teresa Phelan. And she's been very helpful as well.
And the whole, we are recently Origin Green certified as well. So we're a sustainable distillery. So it opens again more avenues from Bord Bia to support us as well, which is quite good. And I have to say Bord Fáilte, which is a tourism department, which helped us a lot for developing our visitor centre.
I have to stop here at some stage. I have to ask another question. On the Bord Fáilte one, did they come to you? Did you go to them? Or who taught you?
No, we had to. There is a program called Digital That Delivers program. So this whole thing is about developing your visitor experience. So,
but did you go to them or did somebody say, listen, Peggy, you should go down to them?
No, we went to them.
Yeah.
So there is, I think.
And who told you about them?
I think online portals. Just go through it and see. Because once you are in their radar, it's very good, especially for visitor experiences.
Yeah, but there are two point people in
court. Yeah, Deirdre Cole.
We're very good. Deirdre Cole and
Jane Darcy. Jane Darcy. So they are our key point of contacts.
They're going to love you. Do come back and tell me when you have cracked the US of A in its entirety. And then you'll draw up here in your limousine and everything else and you'll be saying, a million bottles? Yeah, it's 10 million bottles now. That is Bagia, that is Robert Barrett, both who founders of the Rebel City Distillery. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That great business show.
And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 160. Great business insights and inspiration, all thanks to our sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you're looking for your first home, or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure you visit daft.ie to find the next place you call home. Do sign up for email updates and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast. The address is thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And that is where to go if you would like to advertise with us. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where the sound quality is always 100% proof. On sound distillation today, studio engineer David Tai, and later head distiller and studio manager Peter Rice will taste and test the output, ensuring we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So from me, Conal O'Moran, buchas to you all, agus slán tamall.